there's something curious about this broadcast.
You're listening to The Garbage Pod with Mark Taylor and Adrie Ballhawk Mallers.
Welcome to another edition of The Garbage Pod for the 9th of May 2012. With me, as always, I have Adrie Ballhawk Mallows. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing very good, thank you, sir. And yourself?
Absolutely fine. Bit scary at the moment because I'm getting used to all these knobs who are misses.
I'd have thought you'd be used to them by now, fella. You hang around with my stepbrother for how many years?
Yes, indeed. Right. I decided to call this episode of The Garbage Pod Out of This World, and the reason being is the majority of what will be on topic is going to be about space.
Brilliant.
And what I thought I'd start off with is something that has happened, it actually happened on the 30th of April.
Yeah.
SpaceX, I think you've heard me talk about SpaceX before. They're a company that are a commercial company that a fellow podcaster, a friend of mine, actually works for. And they're a company that are launching, going to be launching spacecraft into space very soon, very, very soon, to be honest with you.
Okay, we've got a date for it now, have we?
We had a date and it's been pushed back. A reason for it being pushed back is they had what they call a static firing test on the 30th. Mm-hmm. And what that involves is basically, it's like having a dress rehearsal for a launch. But as you know, with a rocket, you can't really do dress rehearsals for it, because once it goes, it goes.
Yeah, once you fuel it up, jobs are good.
Well, what they've actually done is they've attached this rocket to a launch tower. It's a Falcon 9 rocket with the Dragon capsule on the top. And they've tethered it, which means it can't go anywhere. And what they actually did was they actually set the engines going on this rocket, all 9 Merlin engines, to set it off for 2 seconds on full power. So you can imagine how strong these tethers were.
Yeah.
But they had to put it on hold because there was a software problem. Usual. And so the countdown stopped at a certain point and then continued again about 20 minutes later. And after that point, the everything was fine. All the test results came back positive. So that was all great. But they weren't 100% happy with this software, so they just wanted to run some more tests on it. So it was supposed to go up on the 7th. I've now pushed it back to the 19th. Of May.
Okay.
And it'll go into space carrying, I think it's 1,200 tons worth of cargo.
1,200 tons?
Yeah.
What's going to be in part of the cargo then?
All kinds of stuff. Supplies for the ISS.
Yeah.
Experiments, all kinds of different bits and pieces. It's not actually going to be berthing with... it's going to be berthing with the space station rather than docking. Now, the difference between berthing and docking is a docking is when it actually attaches itself to the space station. On a berthing, the robotic arm that's on the ISS will come out, and basically the capsule will stop in mid-air, as it were, and this arm will grapple onto it and bring it home.
Right.
Just as the first test, and then gradually they'll get it to dock, and then gradually they'll get it to have astronauts on board as well.
Yeah, but you've got to go through so many tests, haven't you, first, before you start thinking about putting astronauts on board, say?
Absolutely, absolutely. So...
Is the order monkeys, dogs, and then people? Is that right? Or is it dogs, monkeys, people?
Well, in the case of the Russian space program, they actually put a... figure of a human in a capsule, and they had all kinds of little creatures in there. You had things like hamsters and guinea pigs and stuff, and they all started eating this dummy. And you had all these guinea pigs floating about in space, but yeah, that would have been good if they had cameras on board.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah, they're used to a wheel, so what would they have done in zero gravity?
Exactly. But yeah, so that was one of the things that was going on the up in space, or to do with going up in space.
Yeah.
Also related to that, that's not what I wanted to hear. This is going to be a problem. For some reason...
NASA commercial partner SpaceX is a step closer on its planned journey to the International Space Station. After its rollout to Space Launch Complex 40 at Cape Canaveral Air Force Station in Florida, the SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket was lifted into place for a static engine fire test simulating launch. The exercise ended with all nine engines firing at full power for 2 seconds.
Yesterday, the California-based company completed another milestone in preparing for their upcoming mission with a hot fire of the fully fueled Falcon 9 rocket. During this rehearsal, SpaceX engineers ran through all the countdown processes as though it were an actual launch day, which was completed successfully, and it's another important checkout as SpaceX marches towards its launch date a little bit later this month. Once it launches, it'll go through a series of rendezvous and maneuver checkouts and abort capability checkouts before it makes its final approach to the International Space Station. And once it again goes through all those different rendezvous checkouts, it'll park out in a position just a few meters beneath the International Space Station, and Don Pettit and Andre Kuipers will reach out with that robotic arm and grapple with it.
So, this Don Pettit guy, he recently did a video on YouTube. You can find it if you look up Angry Birds on the space station.
Yeah.
But it was there to promote the new Angry Birds in Space game that was
okay.
And basically, he had Angry Birds and pigs, you know, from the game, and he was catapulting them across the space station.
Wicked.
So it was quite cool. Yeah, I've got a bit of a problem here at the moment because for some reason it's not telling me what I'm actually playing, so I'm playing stuff blindly.
That's not good.
Which is a pain in the bum, to be honest with you. I'm trying to find...
SpaceX, the first commercial flight to the International Space Station, is set to lift off next week.
And the work of some budding scientists in Hartford will be on board. Brad Drazen has our Making the Grade report.
They're going to crack it right when it gets up there.
Their minds are somewhere in outer space these days.
Today we're going to split our flask.
A team of young biologists from Annie Fisher STEM Magnet School and University High School in Hartford are sending their work to the International Space Station.
The middle school and the high school students originally came up with this project that they submitted to the National Center for Earth and Space Science Education.
The team is boning up on their skills as they test the effect of parathyroid hormone on osteoblasts.
If that hormone is what our body uses to tell our bones to keep growing, that when we're in space and the bones are losing mass, the hormone will counteract the effect of microgravity on the bones.
The University of Hartford is a key player in this project, providing the equipment and the lab space to take this experiment to the next level.
They needed a place to be able to culture the cells.
Did they look any different?
UHeart professor Amy Levesque says the connection with the younger kids is a real win-win.
And there are some students that can go through 4 years of college and not get research experience. And so for these guys to have this experience now is just amazing.
University High School senior Bo Edward Lawrence is a prime example. He's coming to UHeart in the fall to major in biology with hopes of becoming a pediatrician.
Science, anything can happen. You can put something in, something crazy might come up. And that just gets everything going.
These kids really get geeked about the space program, and Professor Levesque says if that's what gets them hooked on science, so be it.
And once you have their attention, then they're more invested in the project. And hopefully it will keep them interested in science and make them go into science and eventually go into careers in science.
Brad Drazen, NBC Connecticut News.
Now, those schools involved in that project are sending their experiments up on the SpaceX craft when it goes up on the 19th.
Right.
So it's quite an exciting time for those schools, really.
Yeah, definitely.
Right, the other thing, one of the other things I wanted to talk about, have you heard of a setup called Planetary Resources?
No, sir, I have not.
Well, they had a massive press conference last week before. And basically what it is, it's a group of people have invested in this company. And we're talking people with a lot of money. And one of these people is James Cameron.
Director.
That's the guy. And he's also an explorer. Because he explores the seabeds and stuff like that. He goes down in submarines and stuff. Ever since he made the film The Abyss.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's funded a lot of these expeditions because there's a lot we don't know about the seabeds. And, he's funded a lot of these. He's now put a lot of money into this thing called Planetary Resources. Now, Planetary Resources is a company that intends to build spacecraft to land on near-Earth objects, i.e. asteroids, and mine them for the resources that are on them.
Right.
To help our planet.
Yeah.
So instead of these things crashing into our planet, why not take the resources from them?
Yeah, it's an interesting theory.
So, let me just play this piece. This is the actual promotional video that they had at the press conference, but it makes quite good listening as well. So I thought I'd play this in.
There are several Japanese astronauts.
Oh, wrong
such
one.
As there are several.
We are famous for our
I
robots,
am having
but we also
problems.
Have astronauts.
It's not playing the file that I wanted. Hang on.
No worries, dude.
Discovery Prize. Here we go.
Everything we hold of value on Earth, metals, minerals, energy, water, real estate, are literally in near infinite quantities in space. Planetary Resources' mission is to gain access to the natural resources of space by mining near-Earth approaching asteroids. With technological advances that are coming out of exponential technologies and investors willing to bear the risk, small teams are now able to do what only governments and large corporations could do before. Our vision is to catalyze humanity's growth both on and off the Earth. We're breaking new ground. Now is the time for us to gain access to these resources. And at the end, the entire human race will be the beneficiary as we expand our reach beyond the Earth into the solar system.
We've been searching for near-Earth objects mainly to assess the hazard of an impact on the Earth. Turns out that most of these asteroids are not a threat to the Earth, but they do offer potential benefits. They're in Earth-like orbits that offer accessible resources that we can tap into, both for scientific knowledge and returning those strategic supplies to Earth.
Our plan for opening up the resources of the solar system is threefold. First, we're going to identify all of the most valuable near-Earth asteroids, where they are, what they're made of, and how to reach them. Second, we're going to develop the technology and the capability to transform those resources into valuable materials. And third, we're going to deliver those materials to the point of need, whether it's a fuel depot orbiting the Earth or elsewhere in space.
Our small and focused team will enable the commercial exploration of the solar system. We're using experts who've gained their experience in NASA and the tech industry, and we're keeping our goals simple and clear.
We have a need now for the knowledge of what's on these asteroids, their potential resources in space, and the government is taking a scientific and measured approach to exploring them. We can really increase the knowledge that we get and the pace at which it comes back to us by involving commercial innovation and commercial visits to these asteroids.
We are going to change the way the world thinks about natural resources.
Oops.
Okay, so I have a question about that. And forgive me, everyone out there, if this sounds like a really stupid question, but if the asteroids are near the Earth, you're mining them for resources, so you're decreasing their mass weight, effectively. Are they not more likely to be drawn in by Earth's gravity, forcing them to come to Earth quicker? Or to even come to Earth when they should just be orbiting? Or
no, from what I've gathered, imagine Red Dwarf, right? The Red Dwarf's got that massive, great big scoop on the front of it.
Yes.
This, basically, what these ships are going to be huge. And they're going to just eat the stuff, and then they'll mine it whilst it's inside the actual craft, so they can push it away from any danger. That's how I've seen the videos of it.
Right. Okay. So they're not actually like physically mining like the old school sort of oil, like coal miners, effectively. They're going to go through the asteroid fields and take whatever is in the asteroid belt rather than mining physical asteroids.
So basically they'll see some that are like getting closer and they'll aim for those so that it pushes it away from any danger to the Earth.
Okay.
Basically. These guys on this team are basically ex-NASA employees. They've been secretly working on these projects for the last 6 years. They've been designing craft and different bits and pieces. So they're now after the funding to actually put it in motion. And there's a lot of people who are big name guys, like, as I say, James Cameron, one of the guys who owns Google, is funding it as well.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, SpaceX is owned by, or their CEO is a guy called Elon Musk. And before he got into space exploration, guess what he started up?
A bad aftershave with that name.
PayPal.
Ah, okay, yeah. Yeah, not too shoddy work there.
No, quite a bit of money coming in.
Yeah, just a tad.
So that was one of the big stories, and that was kept hush-hush for a long time, and then there was this, on Facebook it came up, click here for a big press conference, which I did, and it was about an hour long. God, can you hear that car go past?
No, I can't, mate, no.
Wow.
Sorry, dude.
I'm surprised you didn't hear that then.
It's my ears, mate, I'm getting old.
Yeah, so that's what they're trying to do. They're just trying to use their facilities in space, use their resources. There's all kinds of things that you can get from these asteroids, from There's water in some of them, and therefore, if you're using these depots in space, you can extract the hydrogen from them.
Yeah.
And use them as a fueling depot to get you on further to the next destination that you want to get to. That kind of thing. Then you've got all like some precious metals. I mean, these asteroids have got platinum in them and stuff like that, which platinum's used in all kinds of stuff. I mean, your mobile phone has got platinum in it.
Yeah.
And there's lots of other resources on these things. Some we don't even know about yet until we start exploring.
Yeah, that's very true.
So
if my mobile phone has platinum in it, does that mean I get good money if I sell it?
If you see the amount that's actually in it, tiny amounts. But yeah, every mobile phone has got... This is why when these send your phone back to us and we'll give you money for your phone, they make more money than you think.
Oh, really? What, just for basically taking it?
Taking the metals out of it, yeah.
Oh, the metals?
Mm-hmm. Even on the crappy phones, even on the really crappy phones that nobody wants,
yeah,
they've all got metals in them that can be used.
Oh, well, so you literally send it back, they take out all the scrap metal effectively and
make money on it
for a good price.
Mm. Yeah. Right. One of the other things was we were discussing this in one of the other shows, actually. It would have gone out on episode 6, but you recorded it on episode 5.
Okay, no worries. Well, that was a mammoth session, wasn't it? I think we were chatting for about 3 hours.
Recording time, I got about 2 hours out of it.
Okay.
So we're not doing badly now, actually, to be honest. But not all of that's going to be going into the show.
No,
But the next one I wanted to talk about was, as I say, it was mentioned in a previous show. We mentioned about the Enterprise and the Discovery.
Yes.
Now, on the... let me get this right. On the 17th of April, the Discovery flew from Kennedy Space Center
and New York
up to Dulles.
Oh yeah, okay.
In that's Washington, isn't it? Of course, it's Washington because it flew around Washington, did a sort of victory fly around before it actually landed on piggyback on the back of this Boeing 747. And there are some fantastic photographs if you look out there of it going around the National Monument and over the White House and Capitol Building and all that kind of stuff. Fantastic photographs. And then it landed at Dulles and moved over to the Smithsonian, which is also in the Washington area. And that's when the Discovery saw the Enterprise for the first time. They virtually nearly touched nose to nose.
So was it the Discovery that's gone to New York? Sorry,
no, the Discovery's gone to the Smithsonian, and the okay. Enterprise is going to New York.
Right.
The Enterprise was already at the Smithsonian.
Yeah.
And basically, I'll play you the clip from the Discovery going to Dulles. But hang on a second, I'll play that in.
Okay.
Escorted by a NASA T-38 jet, Space Shuttle Discovery, atop the NASA 905 shuttle carrier aircraft, made its much-anticipated arrival in the Washington, D.C. metro area. It was the 38th and final time Discovery has traveled piggyback on the modified Boeing 747, and undoubtedly the most anticipated. Onlookers gathered on rooftops, along the National Mall, wherever they could, to catch a glimpse of the iconic shuttle as it was flown overhead.
I got goosebumps. I was watching it through my my telephoto lens as it went over the Lincoln Monument down here, and really impressed me emotionally.
What a defining moment this is for us, because it's the end of a an incredible space program. There's so much the shuttle program has done, and I wanted to make sure that my kids had that personal appreciation of it.
After a series of flyovers, the SCA and the most prolific space shuttle in history made a picture-perfect landing at Dulles International Airport in advance of its induction into the Smithsonian and display at the Udvar-Hazy Center in Northern Virginia.
To those who say our best days of space exploration are behind us, I simply must disagree. While it is absolutely wonderful to reminisce about the past, and that is, of course, what we come to the Smithsonian Museums to do, NASA must continue and does focus on the future. You need only admire this unbelievable space shuttle and their accomplishments to realize that the people, the organizations, and the nation that created them have only just begun.
Right, yeah, so quite a sad day, really, for me also, because Discovery was always my favourite of the shuttle fleet. Reason for that is she was the workhorse of the fleet. Mm-hmm. Whenever there was a problem, Discovery was there. When Challenger blew up, Discovery was the next to go up straight after.
Yeah.
Well, once they've done their investigation. When the Columbia blew up, the Discovery was there for the return to flight.
Yeah.
And also, when the Atlantis went up to the Hubble.
Yeah.
There's no one around to help you out if there's a problem. But it's the only time for that I can remember having two shuttles on each of the launch pads, so that the Atlantis went up to the Hubble. If there's problems, they send the Discovery up to bail them out.
So, oh wow, okay.
So I've got a photograph, an amazing photograph, aerial photograph of both the shuttles, one on pad 39A and one on pad 39B, and it's not often you get to see that. Or you got to see that, should I say?
Yeah.
So it's an amazing amazing shot to have. Now, as we said, the Enterprise was already at the Smithsonian, so basically they wheeled the Enterprise out and wheeled the Discovery in its place. They didn't have to do anything apart from change the signage and everything.
Yeah.
And then back at back at Kennedy, they have what they call a mating facility, which is like a big hoist that they can put the shuttle on top of the plane and send it off wherever it needs to go. Mm-hmm. But you don't have that facility at KFC. So they had to, or at Smithsonian. So they had to lift it off on crane, you know, loads of different cranes, get it on top, make sure it's fastened down properly.
Yeah, of course.
Ship it over to KFC, off to Kennedy, JFK's, and then do the reverse procedure. The only thing is that the Intrepid Museum will not be ready for it until July. So they're housing it in a massive hangar at JFK until they can get it down to the Intrepid. And when they can, they're going to, from the airport, they're going to put it on a ferry.
Yeah.
And float it down the Hudson.
Easiest way to get there. Have you been to rush hour New York?
Well, I hardly think you're going to go down. downtown New York on a massive truck with a shuttle on the top of it.
That would be epic. Downtown Manhattan, 6 o'clock in the evening, trying to get home from work, space shuttle in your way. What are you going to do? I'm just looking at some pictures now, actually, from New York and from Washington with the flyovers, and there's just some amazing pictures.
They are wonderful, aren't they?
Taken. Yeah, like, there's a couple where you've got, obviously, the shuttle going over Empire State Building. Just magnificent. And there's another great one of it going past Freedom Tower as well. Just phenomenal. Literally, it just looks, the flybys look so low as well, which I'm surprised they kind of got away with, really. But yeah, just the pictures are phenomenal, and there's some random ones thrown in as well on the pictures.
There's a really there's a Photoshop one going around of the Starship Enterprise flying over. Manhattan Island. It's really, really quite funny.
Oh, brilliant. I'm just wondering on Google, where I've got all these brilliant pictures of the Enterprise, like over Washington and things like that, and how I've ended up with a picture of Epico and Primo and Rosa Mendez from WWE. Tony Blair. Sure how they fit into the scheme of things, but there we go.
No idea.
But yeah, amazing pictures. Just, and there's that awesome nose to nose picture as well, which is, yeah, just phenomenal.
Right, I'm just trying to find one of the other ones. Actually, it might be easier if I do this, but it might drown you out slightly when I do it. So bear with me. Okay, yeah. When the Enterprise arrived at JFK. Okay, I'll play. Oh, here it is. This is a speech made by Laurie Garvey, who is the deputy administrator for NASA. Now, the administrator for NASA makes it sound like it's a secretary or someone, but the administrator is the chief honcho at NASA, and the deputy administrator is the second in command. This is Laurie Garvey talking about the Enterprise.
Okay.
Well, hello, New York. It is absolutely wonderful to be here with you as we give you the Space Shuttle Enterprise. While New York is gaining the space shuttle today, I must admit this is bittersweet for NASA, because we're saying goodbye a bit. And the shuttle has given us such an amazing program over her 30-year history, launching satellites and spacecraft that peer out into the universe, like the Hubble Space Telescope, as well as launching spacecraft that look right back here at planet Earth and help us understand our own planet. The men and women who brought you the space shuttle are not going to rest. We are across this country, as I speak, building space vehicles with names like Orion and Dragon and Dream Chaser to take us not only to and from the space station, but beyond low Earth orbit to an asteroid and on to Mars. The space program is alive and well because of the Space Shuttle Enterprise and what she has brought to this nation.
Yeah, you have to excuse the noise in the background there, but what you've got to remember is she was doing these speeches from an international airport.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And who better to do a speech on behalf of the Enterprise than none other than Leonard Nimoy?
Hey, brilliant.
This is a reunion for me. 35 years ago, I met the Enterprise for the first time. When this ship was first built, it was named Constitution. Star Trek fans can be very persuasive. They sent a lot of letters to President Gerald Ford at the time, and the president logically decided that the ship should be named after our spaceship Enterprise, and that's how this Enterprise came to be named. I want to thank NASA for giving us the Enterprise, Gerald Ford for naming it the Enterprise, the Star Trek fans who insisted that it should be named the Enterprise, to the scientists, the engineers who make these wonderful things happen. I say to all of them and to Enterprise, live long and prosper. Thank you.
Oh, wow, that's amazing.
When I don't know what they're going to do when it actually arrives at Intrepid, who they'll bring in to do speeches. My money is on a guy called Mike Massimino. Now, he probably doesn't mean anything to you.
No, you're right, he doesn't, to be fair.
Mike Massimino is one of the most charismatic astronauts there is on the planet. I mean, he's the kind of guy, if he was to cut his head off, it would say NASA all the way through him, you know. He's one of these guys. And he has done some quite amazing work for NASA. And he comes from New York. So what better astronaut to see the Enterprise in his hometown?
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Right. The last thing I wanted to talk about was on the 2nd of May in Berlin was the... there was a huge conference about the International Space Station.
Yeah.
And about where it's going and the future of it. And they had the big five there. All five of the partners were there, plus 300 scientists and journalists and space geeks, really. Actually, somebody I know through Twitter was actually there. A girl online who calls herself Space Kate on Twitter. And... she was actually there and she was tweeting back letting people know of all the different wonderful stuff that was happening at this seminar. Anyway, I've got some clips from each of the five partners involved. So you've got obviously NASA.
Yeah.
You've got the Canadian Space Agency. You've got ESA, the European Space Agency. You've got the Russian Space Agency and JAXA, the Japanese Space Agency. And the first one is a guy called Jean-Jacques Dordain, who is the European Space Agency Director General.
Okay.
The space station is a unique laboratory and a unique platform. There is no such laboratory or such platform anywhere else. And the point is that this is a common platform where the agencies are cooperating, but which is open to all scientists. And what I hope is that the scientists will compete to use the space station. So what I am expecting is a very strong competition. I think that the most important feature of today is the fact that the five partners are together to share their experience and to develop common plans. And I think that this is certainly the most important feature of today. It's we have worked together and we plan the future together.
Right. I will now apologise to listeners because I'm getting some really weird background noise from yourself.
Oh, sorry, dude.
The only problem I've got here is that I can't shut your microphone off at the moment whilst because you're on the same channel as the stuff coming through until I can sort out this problem with the MP3 player because it's for some reason not showing me what files I'm playing, and the only way I can do that is take the memory card out of it, stick it into the computer, and the computer shares the same channel as you.
Right.
So that's my problem on that. The second one, actually I might not go through all of these. The one that I will play is the guy whose name is Mark Uran, and he is the International Space Station Director for NASA, and I will play his piece.
We have a very robust program plan right now. For the first time in NASA's history, we actually have two parallel programs. One is to continue, as we have historically, to develop a government-owned and operated spacecraft, our multi-purpose crew vehicle and our Orion crew vehicle. But we also have in parallel a program to buy commercial flights from U.S. suppliers that will own and operate their own commercial space transportation systems. Well, I had to recall a quotation from a U.S. astronaut, Bill Reedy, who was a prior associate administrator for our Office of Space Flight, when he made it quite clear, our kids want to grow up to be astronauts, not robots. We have a very...
Getting a bit of feedback there for some reason.
Yeah, the piece has just disappeared as well. Is that the end of the interview?
Yeah, that was pretty much the end of it. I think that was quite a prominent piece that he actually said that, that there are people talking on the Earth saying, well, why do we need to send people into space? Why can't we send robots and probes and this, that and the other? And his response to that was, well, our kids don't want to grow up to be robots. They want to grow up to be astronauts.
Yeah, absolutely they do. The whole point about one of the great things about being human is expanding the mind and experiencing new things. You don't want to just be like, oh, okay, yeah, this is great, I'll just stay here.
But, just trying to see if there was anything else on my list. I think that was just about it. The reason why I decided not to play the other three pieces is that... They're difficult to understand what they're saying, not being nasty to our fellow partners in the space industry, but you had the Canadian Space Agency Director General. He is a French-Canadian and can be a little bit difficult to understand with all this background noise that I've got at the moment. That's what I was thinking of. You've also got the Japanese Office for Space Exploration Minister. He is very difficult to understand because he doesn't speak very good English, so you really have to concentrate on that. And Alexei Krasnov of Roscosmos, the Russian space agency, he can be a little bit tricky to understand as well. So under different circumstances I would have played them, but as it is, it's not the best to do. So that's about it for now. So what I will do is I think we'll finish the show there.
Okay.
And I will play us out with some music, but first of all I will say this to one and all: if you want to contact the show, you can do by sending us an email to garbagepod@virginmedia.com, and remember,
your input is our output,
and take care.
The Garbage Pod is a Spamhead production.